It's 5:15 here on Galesburg's Evening News. I'm Terry Cavanaugh. As we mentioned today, we're visiting with Knox College President Dr. Teresa Mott, Monmouth College President Dr. Clarence Wyatt, and Carl Sandburg College President Dr. Lori Sundberg. They're here gathered tonight to talk about the importance of MAP grant funding or the lack thereof and other funding that's not coming specifically to Carl Sandburg College. First of all, before we get into the program, let me just express my thanks to Robin DeMott for coordinating this visit and to you three for just being able to work into your schedules, being able to be here tonight all together. So I appreciate that, and just nice to have you back in the studios. And Dr. Wyatt, nice to meet you.
Good
and
to
have
meet you, Terry, yeah.
Here in the studios as well. Let me begin. It's, I think, 6 months into the budget impasse for the state of Illinois, and I read a piece that said 21 community colleges and 15 private colleges have told the Illinois Student Assistance Commission that they don't plan on crediting the MAP grants for the spring semester. I'm not sure how that affects your schools. I'm not sure what you all did in the fall, but I know that both Dr. Amott and Dr. Sundberg told me that there was an issue as we started the fall semester and when I talked to them just prior to that, and I'm sure that existed in your case too. Mm-hmm. At Monmouth. So what do we look at? Were you part of the poll that they just polled recently asking if they'd fund in the spring semester?
Terry, I can respond to that. Sandburg, in the fall, we did float the MAP money for students. It runs for us about $380,000 each term, right around there. And we did float it for the fall. We're not floating it for spring. And the reason for that is that we're also not receiving our base aid. And we also floated in the fall adult education and literacy, which the state was not paying either. And so and that program we have temporarily suspended. Now, we floated it during the fall, but we can't float it for the spring as well.
The literacy program.
Literacy, adult education, English as a second language. Mm-hmm. Those are all grant programs and not part of our core work. So, you know, I like to say that we're funding the revenue side of the budget and we're funding the expense side of the budget because we're trying to float the revenue side, which is our equalization, our base aid, all of those kinds of things. At the same time, MAP and our grants and all the rest of it that goes along with it. So it has been truly a challenging time.
Mm-hmm. Some of the public universities, I think, said they would float for the spring semester, but you three fall into different categories with community colleges and private universities. What's the case at Monmouth?
Well, we were able to, like Lori, we were able to back it during the fall. It is our intent to do so in the spring, although, like everybody else, it's going to prevent us from doing some things that we had wanted to do to be able to move the institution forward, to make some investments that we wanted to make in some strategic areas. We're going to have to take a hard look at our cash flow for the rest of the year. But right now, we believe we have the ability and it's our intent to back it for the spring as well.
Kind of, can you express the dollar figure amount that you're looking at?
We have 560 approximately students who are MAP eligible, who should be receiving their MAP money right now. And for us, it's right around $2.5 million for the entire year.
Mm-hmm. At the four-year colleges and university, the amount of MAP they can receive is higher than the first 2 years.
All right.
So that plays into all of this as well. So for the privates and for the universities, it's a lot more money that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot more money for the students as well. Tuition's higher. Right.
Yeah. The average I was reading was about $2,700. Does that ring true for students, or does it vary really depending on the college that they applied to?
It depends upon their financial need,
right,
number one. And then it also is determined by whether they're in the first 2 years at the community college or whether they're at the university or the private college.
Yeah. Teresa, how's that affecting Knox?
Knox is a trimester school. We floated the fall. We are in the midst of our winter term. And we are taking the position that the state of Illinois has made commitments to these young people, and we are expecting them to deliver on those commitments. We are also making some very hard choices, given where we are now. For us, it's about $1.5 million. The average student at Knox gets about a $4,700 mm-hmm. grant.
That's the same for us, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these, that's about the maximum grant. These are families with significant financial need. Many of those young people are the very first students in their families to go to college, and the family members have made substantial sacrifices to send them to college. They can't come up with more money. They have already stretched about as far as those families can. The students are already working as many hours out both on campus and out in the Galesburg community. They're doing about what they can. So when we look at this, we will do the best we can, but we are taking it month by month. It is a cash flow mm-hmm. issue for all of us, but we find it hard to imagine how the state of Illinois would extend these promises to young people and their families and then renege on those promises.
Right.
Is it bothersome that the state's gone back to, I think, help fund the lottery, help fund other avenues, help fund, I mean, mm-hmm. essential services that we would feel are important?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think in some ways it's been an interesting dynamic because I am the new kid in town in terms of Illinois politics. I came from Kentucky where I thought politics were odd enough, but as I've said to Lori and Teresa, I think the only place left for me to go is Louisiana now. But certainly many of these essential services needed to be funded, but it's been to a degree by, you know, the squeakiest wheel or who can threaten the most effective court action. And, you know, as Teresa said, and I'm sure Lori agrees, there's, if you look at this just as a, you know, forget the obligation that was made to these students, as Teresa said, even if you can put that aside, if we're supposed to be considering, if this is supposed to be a business creation environment, if this is mm-hmm. supposed to be an investment environment, let's think about the student who goes out of state and creates that new industry that is now making Milwaukee prosperous instead of Peoria. Like everybody else, it's just hard to fathom that you can't see this as an important investment to make in the future of Illinois.
Well, not only that, if I'm not mistaken, the MAP grant funding over the last 3 years, if not more than that, has already excluded students who qualify because the funding was not there. Am I correct in that assessment?
That is correct. So mm-hmm. the families have already had to dig very deep mm-hmm. to be able to send their sons and daughters to college. I think the other piece of this is that we are economic engines in our communities. There are many, many small communities, particularly across rural Illinois, where a community college, a private college, a public institution, a campus of the University of Illinois is a critical economic engine. It provides terrific jobs. It provides all kinds of advantages to those communities. And I think our primary concern is, of course, our students' education. But when we start talking about the kinds of hard choices that we might have to make, right. absent that funding, these are choices that will have impacts, ripple impacts, in our communities as well. So the issue of the economic engine goes in so many directions. It's the students themselves as drivers of economic growth, but it's also colleges and universities as drivers of economic growth.
We're talking tonight, if you just joined us, with the presidents of Carl Sandburg College, Dr. Lori Sundberg, of Monmouth College, Dr. Clarence Wyatt, and Dr. Teresa Mott from Knox College. Lori, in your particular case, this could be affecting students that are young and students that are older. Could it? Mm-hmm. Could it not? I mean, are you running the gamut there with a wide?
Oh, of course.
And what percentage is that?
Of course. Well, we end up having more of our non-traditional students tend to be more in the career tech area, and you know, we had state treasurer here. It's been a few months ago at Knox, and we had a couple of our students there, and they were non-traditional students, and they were really able to speak to what the lack of MAP funding would mean if the college wasn't able to float it. And so that's the challenge. And, you know, for us, 90% of our employers in our district report that they have hired a Sandburg graduate in the last mm-hmm. 10 years. And I like to tell people that when you go to the hospital, from the moment that you arrive until the moment you leave, you're going to be cared for by Sandburg graduates. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 85% of our nursing graduates live within an hour of the campus. And so when we talk about economic engines and economic and workforce, you know, we're talking about our own community and our own graduates. And I know Monmouth College, for example, they recruit, mm-hmm. you know, locally. A lot of those mm-hmm. students will stay. In the case of Knox, they have the Fellows Program now, and those students stay in the community. And so those are all reasons where our community is direct benefit of our graduates, mm-hmm. you know, now and in the future. And so it's that's what's challenging. If we really want to restore Illinois and restore our workforce, I mean, cutting higher ed or not making higher ed a priority is not the place to start. That, you know, just not.
Yeah. Go ahead, Clarence.
Well, I was going to say there's a difference between running scared and running smart. And I have a feeling that in some ways we're running scared right now mm-hmm. when we really should be running smart.
You know, last week a story came out. This was kind of interesting to me because we had booked the program, and it said Governor Bruce Rauner is taking a shot at Illinois universities over their spending. And I thought maybe he was referring to public universities, but in any case, he was referring to universities and their spending, saying colleges have raised more than $1 billion in new revenue through tuition hikes over the past 14 years. They're top-heavy with administrators, pay executives too much, and fund exorbitant golden parachutes to leaders who resign for misconduct. By the way, I'm reading from an Associated Press story. In that same story, the Senate is considering a plan to help pay back schools that paid tuition grant funds up front for students this school year. You can comment on either side of that story. What I want to know specifically is, are you hearing anything that Springfield might be closer? And what do you make of the governor's comments on?
I will attempt to respond to that. What I can tell you is that since the late 1980s, there's all kinds of data to suggest that there has been a decreased prioritization on higher education funding, and that's been at the federal level, and it's been at the state level as well. And so tuition rates, while they are getting to be a problem, and we're not in a sustainable model, at the same time, if there's not going to be a priority by the state and the feds, that's what happens. And so it's this vicious cycle where there isn't enough funding, so tuition has to go up, and then students can go somewhere else. Then there's mm-hmm. competition, and so then they have to raise tuition, and it just keeps going. And so I would respond to that. And the other way that I can respond is just to tell you about my own institution. We have the same number of administrators today as what we had 20 years ago. I met with the governor. I was one of several people in a group. And I told him that. I think that he does see the difference between community colleges and universities. I do believe that. But on the other hand, not all of us, and I can certainly speak mm-hmm. for my colleagues here in the privates, we don't have bloated administrations. And we are trying to mm-hmm. to do what's right by our students and to provide as rich of an experience as we can.
I think we also have seen actually a decline in the number of administrative and support staff over that same period of time. I think it's very easy to talk about university administrators and forget that some of those people might be counselors. Mm-hmm. They could be academic tutors. They could be financial aid counselors, helping families figure out how they can afford college.
All right.
There are many, many different positions on our campuses that are directed specifically at student support, and they count as administrative staff. We had last year our tuition increase was the lowest in 40 years. So we are doing our best to be cognizant of families' struggles, and we are doing our very best to be cost efficient. But with the withdrawal of higher ed support from the public sphere, we are facing this this problem, this vicious cycle mm-hmm. that we do have to find the dollars somewhere.
And it's really becoming, you know, public university is really becoming a misnomer in a lot of places. And I know that just before I moved from mm-hmm. Kentucky here, that the University of Kentucky, the flagship public institution, received 9% mm-hmm. of its general revenue from the General Assembly of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. That's, you know, that is not a public institution mm-hmm. in any real sense of the word. And that's occurring in Illinois. Mm-hmm. It's occurring in many states. And, you know, to the point that Teresa was making, there are many of the things that we want to do in terms of support of our students, but there are some things that we're mandated to do as well. There's new legislation, for example, regarding sexual harassment. There are requirements that are being placed on us, and, you know, these are all good things. These are things that we want to do, but, you know, the term unfunded mandate comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a term we've heard many, many years.
Yeah.
Especially with regards to education. And as I said, the governor with this memo from his deputy mm-hmm. chief of staff last Wednesday, I don't know, it just says Illinois universities, that's painting everybody with a broad mm-hmm. brush. But mm-hmm. at the same time, if you read that, you're thinking, does he mean everybody? Is he talking about, you know, mm-hmm. And it's good mm-hmm. for you to be able to define your own circumstances here and the impact that it has in the area and the degree to which your graduates are employed in the area. Sandberg, if I'm not mistaken, has made great strides in trying to put together programs that will feed into industries here that need specific, especially in the trades, and your colleges may be doing the same
as well. Oh, sure.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we most certainly work with industry. I mean, you know, Burlington Northern Santa Fe is mm-hmm. our largest employer mm-hmm. in the region, and we have a program dedicated specifically to reach out to them and their workforce needs. Just to give you a little bit of a clarification or a little bit of idea about the withdrawal of support, in 2008, Carl Sandburg College received about 40% of our total budget from the state. Last year, when we built this year's budget, we predicted we would get somewhere around 11%, and that's with flat funding. We did a State of the College address on Friday, where I said that I would like to try to build a budget next year with no state support. Mm-hmm. Because when you build a budget and it's contingent on it and then it doesn't come through, you're just getting whipsawed.
Right.
And so I'd like to try to accomplish it. I'm not sure that we can, but I think we can get pretty close.
There's a story on the news tonight about a university in Chicago now wanting to plan for more donations because they cannot mm-hmm. rely mm-hmm. on the state's funding. Where are we in the – well, can I take a break here and are you? Do you have time to stay a
sure,
few more minutes?
Sure, you okay. bet.
It's 5:40 on Galesburg's Evening News. I'm Terry Cavanaugh. My guests tonight are talking about MAP funding. That's the Monetary Assistance Program grants that the state administers. Dr. Teresa Mott from Knox College, Dr. Clarence White of Monmouth College, and Dr. Lori Sundberg of Carl Sandburg College, all the presidents of the respective institutions are with me tonight. We've been talking about the lack of MAP funding and their plans for the fall semester. We were talking a little bit during the break that even some of the federal funding for summer programs, I think in terms of the Pell Grant, Lori, is that
yes,
right?
Yes.
Have also diminished. So that causes a vicious little cycle for students who may want to catch up mm-hmm. on classes they couldn't take during fall or spring semester and then don't have the funds to take it in mm-hmm. the summer. What also is troublesome, it seems, is that there are students who, even if they get the MAP grants, whatever they get may still fall short of what they needed. So then where are they? Taking less classes or what? How does that?
Oh, sure. You know, most students who do qualify for MAP also qualify for Pell, which is federal financial aid. But in, you know, many cases, that's still not enough, particularly for students if they have families and they have living mm-hmm. expenses and they're not working, hopefully a full-time job. You know, they're mm-hmm. trying to work part-time. And so, yes, there's definitely unmet need, even with both of them. So it continues to be a challenge, and it really is bears for greater discussion. And, you know, we talked about this over the break, greater discussion for us as a country in terms of what our direction is going to be and what our priorities are going to be. And higher ed really, I think, needs to come to the forefront in terms of the way forward and really placing a priority on that.
Dr. Wyatt, what percentage of Monmouth College students are receiving aid? Do you know off the top of your head?
Receiving overall financial aid?
Mm-hmm.
100%. Everybody. Every one of our students receives some degree of financial assistance.
Is that close to yours, Teresa, too, at Knox?
If you count what's called institutional aid.
And that's what I'm counting as
okay.
well, yeah.
Right. That is the institution, in essence, discounts the okay. tuition. So we say, well, if your family, after federal financial aid and after any loans that your family might take out and after any work income that you can bring in by taking a job, if you can't reach the cost of attendance, we will, in essence, forgive some of that to try to make it possible for you to attend. And, it is a very, very rare student who's in a position to do that without some form of either institutional aid or federal or state aid. Right. There are also private scholarship funds, foundation funds, the Rotary clubs, for example, et cetera. And we all three of our institutions work with students to help them identify every possible source of funding that they can find. At Knox, about a third of our students receive Pell grants and therefore MAP grants. That is the federal financial aid and then the state aid that is directed at the most low income of our students. Mm-hmm. But I suspect that number is much higher, the Pell eligibility among your traditional age students.
At Sandberg, about 70% of our students receive federal and state financial aid. It's different at the community college. We don't do tuition discounting or institutional aid similar to the way the private colleges provide it. But 70% qualify for federal and state aid, which is, a huge number.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So 100% of your students, much like
receives some form of aid. About 48-49% of our students are Pell eligible.
Mm-hmm. So it's impacting the whole student bodies then of these colleges and community colleges.
Mm-hmm. And I think the effect is not just, say, this term, this semester or this term.
Right.
A student who delays completion, it isn't able to graduate, now that tends to create all kinds of havoc. It creates higher debt burdens, and we hear a lot about student debt. Well, most of the student debt is incurred by students who don't actually graduate and receive the higher income and the higher wages and salaries that degree would have entitled them to had they graduated on time. So if they can't make it and they drop out, they're still stuck with the student debt. So our concern, of course, is that without the MAP grant, our students will be forced to leave college prematurely, without the degree, in the case of Sundberg, whether it's the associate's degree, whether it's the career certification that they absolutely require in order to be employed. They cannot be employed without that career certification. So if they leave without it, they will have incurred some debt, and they will have spent time and not realized that return.
Well, we know the solution would be getting that budget in place, or partly, but I don't want to say that like that casually. But what do we do now?
Well, I would say one of the things is what the three of us have been doing together with the op-ed that appeared in the Register Mail and our thank you for making the time for us to be there. A lot of it is just keeping the narrative out there. I think that's one of the we have to keep the importance of this investment out there in front of the public. And the three of us had lunch the other day, and Lori rightly said that the legislators know this, the people in the executive cabinet know this. We're not telling them anything they don't know, but politics is the telling of a story, and we've got a wonderful, important story to tell on behalf of these students, and we're going to keep telling it. So that's a big part of what we're going to do.
I think part of our job, and the way I see it, is that no one else is going to advocate for our students if we don't. And so the legislators do know, but at the same time, behind that lack of a budget, there are student stories and student lives that are being impacted. And so I see it as my job, and I know that Teresa and Clarence do as well, their job to talk about that and to keep it in front of everyone and to advocate, because it does. It's having a real effect on our own local students, our own local kids, and someone has to advocate for them.
And would I be mistaken if I said, I look at Monmouth and Knox College and some of the newest provisions on campus, if you will, the building at Knox, the business and math center at Monmouth, and think, were it not for graduates who completed their education, I mean, that's alumni giving, is it not?
Exactly.
And it's also local jobs.
Right. Yes.
Every time we put up a building or renovate a building, we are creating jobs for the folks who live in these communities. I think, you know, the interesting question will be, how do we reach political compromise?
Mm-hmm.
We have differing views. We understand that. And we certainly welcome the ways in which democracies open up a space for people to disagree. The question is, can we find a political compromise in which our students' needs are heard, but everybody gives a little?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would agree.
Yeah,
that's well said.
Yes.
All right. We need to wrap up. I appreciate your time, Dr. Sundberg, Dr. Wyatt, Dr. Amott from Knox, Monmouth, and Carl Sandburg College. Please come back.
Love
and,
to.
Would love to. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. You're always welcome. Just give me a call or have an associate give me a call, and we'll do what we can to help you out. But thank you so much for being with us
tonight.
Thank you,
Terry.
Thank you very much, Terry.